It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 232, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, when tech shuts down, fancy locks, prime day, and name Sal.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's been an interesting 24 hours.
Okay.
Yesterday, I decided, I'm doing some traveling later this month, and I decided it would be a good idea to get my flu shot, my COVID shot, and my B12 shot all at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And getting the shots was fine. 12 hours later, I could, so it basically knocked me on my butt. I was, the last night, around midnight, I was in, doing the standard thing, right? Shivering, achy, you know, kind of nauseous, all that kind of stuff. Fortunately, that was all in bed, so I didn't actually have to accomplish anything. And I'm very fortunate that I just, you know, sort of recovered from it all by this morning. I mean, I didn't, you know, do anything physical today, but so one piece of advice, if you can, take them separately.
Well, I want to add that I also had my flu and COVID shot, and I also had exactly the same thing happen,
It
has happened to me every single time.
See, it's new for me. I've never had reactions to these things. And to be honest, it didn't surprise me in the least doubling up like that.
This is the first time I've gotten the flu and COVID together because it just happened that way. And I've probably had a flu shot every year for at least the last 25 years.
Sure. Yep.
Something like that. Never had any problem with the flu shot. Even like last year, I think I had the flu and COVID shot a week apart just because of how things were scheduled. And I still didn't have any problem with the flu shot. I figured it wasn't going to make any difference. Every time I get the COVID shot, I'm always laid flat in bed for
interesting
from hours 12 to 36 after getting the shot. And I sometimes hesitate to mention that to people because I don't want to discourage people from getting the COVID shot. The story, the lesson to be learned is it's horrible for me. I'll do it every year.
Yes.
Because it's better than dying, you know.
Exactly.
And so I just go through it every year. I know to schedule it on a Friday. To have Saturday clear and not have anything planned. And that's what I did.
Yep. I had to, today was pretty much optional. I ended up getting stuff done today anyway, but knowing that I was getting the shots yesterday, I just sort of said, okay, well, you know, worst happens, then, you know, Tuesday becomes a day off. So
the most infuriating thing about this, and I know other people that get it, including my father, who gets it just as bad as I do, is that knowing you feel bad, but knowing you are absolutely not sick in any way, like this is a false positive on your nervous system's, you know, part.
It's your body doing the right thing.
Yes, this is, and that's the number one infuriating thing is knowing you're not sick. Number two is kind of the funny infuriating thing is that when it's, for me at least, when it's over, it's over. It's like, just as you go down hard, you recover so fast. So like a Saturday night, I went to bed and I was like, I think I'm mostly done. Wake up Sunday morning and I'm like, well, you feel weird feeling 100%. I'm like, that's not normal. Like, cause you're used to, you know, your whole life, you get sick. It takes a few days. You still feel, this thing you get with the COVID vaccine, you just bounce back and it's so fast. It's fine.
The other
anyway.
Thing that was a little different for me, I suspect, as compared to you, as I'm sitting there in the office, and you're over 65. You get the double dose of flu shot.
Oh well, that may actually maybe that contributed to it in some way. I did hear about that. I didn't know that when you got to 65, you got that double dose. So interesting. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, so we got some stuff to talk about.
Yes.
One of the things this is tech, and I guess in a way it's not tech, but we're seeing it in the tech space. I got email yesterday from my domain registrar. Mm-hmm. I've been using simpleurl.com for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And he's been in business for like 25 years or something like that. He said, yep, I'm done. I'm shutting her down. Here's what happens. Here's what you can do. In reality, you don't have to do anything, but if you do that, here's, he actually, before the announcement, did up a some kind of agreement with a different registrar. These are he's a an enom reseller, so my assumption is that this person we're moving to is also a an enom reseller. But basically, everything so far is handled as best you could imagine, right? I've been kind of thinking that this guy, since it is a one-man operation, I've been thinking that, at some point he's gonna throw in the towel, and indeed that's what happened. So, he basically he got his he created a plan, he announced his plan, and presumably we're going to follow that plan, and it looks like a reasonable one. Compare and contrast to our friends at Kaspersky.
I didn't know Kaspersky was undergoing a transition.
A forced transition.
Oh.
A couple of months ago, the U.S. Department of something or other decided that Kaspersky security software could no longer be sold and could no longer even be updated in the United States. And I believe there was a deadline of the end of last month. And of course, that's got all the usual political discussions around it and whether or not they should or shouldn't, and are the Russians really behind it, or could the Russians do something? Who knows, right? It all became moot. There's always been a long discussion about that, but it all became moot when the US government said, whatever, you can't use it.
Right.
So there wasn't really a plan. There wasn't really a an anything until last week. People who were still using Kaspersky suddenly woke up and found on their machine a completely different antivirus solution that they had never heard of before. In fact, I'd never heard of it before, called Ultra AV. And
Okay.
it's, it, you know, the details are sketchy because it's been very, how do I want to say this? It's all been handled, opaquely, yes. It's all been, behind the scenes. Things have been happening. There's been no communication about it whatsoever. And it, I mean, Kaspersky at this point doesn't have a whole lot to lose because they have to walk away from the American market anyway. So if they piss off the American market,
Sure.
they don't care. But I just found it such an interesting contrast that ultimately, Kaspersky's walking out the door and saying, good luck, suckers. And simple URL doing a great job of setting, managing expectations, and hopefully following through. It's a good reminder, though, that businesses don't last forever. That's one of the things that that came to mind. I mean, simple URL, like I said, I mean, the industry's been around a long time, that and especially the small providers. But let's face it, you and I aren't going to be doing this forever. At some point, we're going to give up, and that's,
Yep.
the transition plan's a little bit different, but presumably will, give people warning. But especially the small providers, the solo entrepreneurs, the individuals, at some point, yeah, it's going to happen. And I have a lot of respect for the people who take that seriously and do the right thing. It's just something I suspect for people to be aware of, to watch out for, and to notice. Have you run into any companies that, I mean, this is actually fairly rare these days right now. I suspect it's going to happen more and more, but I'm not aware of any companies that have just decided to pack it in.
I'm trying to think. I mean, there's definitely been parts of companies or software. I remember, like, a famous example is Google had a service called FeedBurner in the early days of podcasting.
Yes.
And do you remember FeedBurner, what it
Oh,
did?
absolutely. I used it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gave me
Yeah.
analytics on the podcast.
I mean, the interesting thing about it is it solves several problems because trying to hook up, you have your content and then you have a feed for that content. And then trying to do things like track statistics, how many people downloaded it, get it so that it does appropriate things for different services that require different things in the RSS feed. It was like this all-in-one solution. You took your generic RSS feed for your podcast, you fed it into FeedBurner, and then FeedBurner did all this great stuff with it. Very profound, tons of features. And then you would then give the if you were to say submit your podcast to a directory or to an app or something, you would give them your feed burner feed, right? So it would go from your site or whatever you were using into feed burner, and then the feed burner feed was what everybody would get, and then it was great. If you were smart, like I was, you would not give them your feed burner feed, but go have it go back to your server
Yes.
with a little redirect URL, which was a little technical, too technical for a lot of podcasters to do. So they would
Sure.
skip that step. But that allowed, like me, when Google said we're not doing feed burner anymore, which kind of has an asterisk next to it, because guess what? They're still doing feed burner.
I was going to say, I just brought it up, but I've still got
Yeah,
feeds listed from.
they basically closed it, depreciated it, but said we'll keep the lights on without any fanfare. And they've just done that forever.
I
But
think they're not doing any statistics.
they're
It's
not doing
basically,
yeah,
yep.
they're not doing a lot of stuff, and they're not updating it and all, but it's still there. But the thing was, I was able to redirect. Everybody had a URL that was my domain that redirected to Feedburner, and Feedburner
Yes.
was coming back to my domain. So I was just able to basically close that loop. Or if I wanted to, I could have put another service in the middle there. But other people, had the panic thing of like, oh no, how do I convince? And all these services simply assumed that if you gave them a URL for your RSS feed, that that would never change. So suddenly they had to jump around and say, oh, you need to be able to change to a different feed URL, even though the feed is the same. Anyway, there's that. There's software. I mean, there's tons of stuff. Like Apple has, of course, depreciated things like Aperture, their photo software, the original Final Cut, and replaced it with a completely new app that happened to have the same name. Things like that that kind of left people mind. Even the Apple's original suite of apps for office stuff, they had a fantastic suite of office stuff that they'd inherited from Claris early on. And for more than a decade, it just came with all the Macs. It had the word processor and all this stuff in it. And then they came up with their current suite today, and they discontinued the old stuff. Different file formats, very different file formats.
Right.
So there's a lot of that. Yeah, it happens. Having an exit plan, having something where you can translate all that stuff or whatever. It's also, I could say, a pain for a lot of just regular computer users. If you just had here, I've got my AV solution with Kaspersky, and I've just had it for 15 years, and it's taken care of, and I don't need to know anything more than that. I can just get on with my life. And now suddenly you have to know more.
You have to pay attention.
You
Yep.
have to pay attention. So.
It's interesting. I've been doing the redirect thing as protection for a long time, to the point where I don't typically send people directly to my Facebook page. I sent them to
Yes.
askleo.com/facebook/twitter/ a bunch of other random ones.
I have my own URL shortener, which
I
I
do
just
too.
hand
Yes.
coded. It's just a bunch of lines and a text file. And it because I because macmost.com, that's already seven letter top level domain. So I
Right.
was like, I'm not going to try to do any better than that.
Right.
So I have a way to just add to a little text file any link to anywhere, and then I can redirect people. And it has come in handy over the years,
Oh,
particularly
yeah.
when originally I used it to redirect people to Amazon. If I would mention like oh, you can buy this piece of software to do something, I'd send them to an Amazon, associates link, and then Amazon banned my state from their associates program, and I would have had all these Amazon links everywhere. But they were all in my URL shortener. I just went through and redirected them to various different places,
Right.
and then back to Amazon when they added it back. And yeah, it's handy. But
It's
actually, this
funny.
is. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just say I've got both. I have in one file, I've got the ones that are like the Twitters and the Facebooks and so forth. Actually, those are in my htaccess file, which I think you'll recognize. But I actually have a standalone URL shortener package. That I've been using for a long time, that gives me an interface and
Sure.
some analytics, which is part of what I use it for, just to see how people are still using that and making it very easy to change the targets when they come up.
Indeed. And this is a great this goes right into my next topic.
Excellent. Go for it.
Strangely, okay. And the next topic is about having to replace my smart lock, because just like with one of these services, like deciding they're going down, or Kaspersky, changing overnight,
Right.
I bought a smart lock when I moved about a year and a half ago, and it's great, a little combo on the door. And it was an Amazon. They have a generic Amazon one. It's got a little keypad. It's just called the Amazon Smart Lock or something like that, some like non-name name. And it was really cheap. It was like 60 or $70. And I got that because there were no good systems available at the time, like nothing that worked with Apple Home and other things. I mean, everything had a problem. So I just bought this one and I installed it on the door, and you enter a code and you got in, no key needed. And it was great until last week. It just stopped working. Just stopped working. Like, you press a button and it actually gave an error. And the error was the same as if somebody tried to enter in like a code, like a bad code 5 times, but there was nobody there entering bad code. And it's only supposed to last for 45 seconds anyway. It was like obviously the chip inside just had a fault in it. So, pretty scary that it happened. Thankfully, I was on the inside when it happened, not the outside. So, if I had been on the outside and my wife had been on the outside, I don't know how we'd gotten in. But anyway, that was like, it didn't seem to be anything I could do. Warranty was 1 year. So time to replace it. Okay. Fortunately, I just read an article about a new smart lock that came out that has everything I ever wanted. Fingerprint. It's got multiple codes and you control it with an app. It works with Apple HomeKit and Apple Home Key or Key, whatever it is. It's the key thing. So in other words, I can hold my phone or my watch to it, and it's NFC, right? And it works. And it's Apple's like tech on the phone and watch side, which means it even works when your battery is dead. Because technically, when your battery's dead, it's still a tiny bit of power in there, enough for NFC to work. And so everything, right? Exactly what I wanted. And I was like, great, I will replace it with this. And it's going to cost a pretty penny. I'll tell you right now, it costs $300, or it was like 279 or something. It was like, it costs a lot of money, but this should be my solution and I'll be pretty happy with it. I've not been happy with it at all. It just shows that these products, like I assumed buying the most expensive one out there pretty much it would be like, well, I'm not gonna have any problems. Like if I bought a cheap one from some brand you never heard of, right? And it just, and it was like $115 or whatever, it'd probably be all sorts of things. Oh, the instructions aren't translated correctly and this doesn't work and you gotta do this. But this one should be like the one, it's called the U200 from Aquara. Anyway.
You went for the luxury model with the, enhanced soundproofing, heated seats and all that kind of stuff. Yes.
So right away, the interesting thing is it's supposed to be, it claims super, super easy installation. Super easy installation. I'm like, great, I want that. I get it. The reason it's super easy installation, and I didn't see this mentioned anywhere, is it's not meant to replace your current deadbolt. It controls your current deadbolt. So you have a regular deadbolt in a door, like the $50 thing you would get at Home Depot, with just a key and it turns, and that's all. It keeps the outer part of that has the key. It keeps the inner part with the little rod through it and then the bolt that then moves in and out. That's all from the old lock. You're supposed to have that already. And all it does is replace the little knob that you turn with your fingers on the inside of the door. It goes over that, which is, yeah, I could see that being super easy installation if you have that. But I'm replacing an Amazon smart lock. I don't have that. That outer part with the key, that's a keypad. I could technically have kept the keypad. I would have had two keypads on my door, and one of them would not have worked. It would have looked not only ugly, but highly suspicious and paranoid to anybody else in my building. The guy with the two keypads on his door. It's like, what is going on in there? And yeah, it would have been really stupid. Plus, it occurred to me that it's like, well, what if this was a new door? What if brand new door, no deadbolt in it? Then you should maybe note you need to go out to Home Depot and buy a deadbolt to go in there. So anyway, so that took me that just delayed everything like 2 days. Why I ordered the deadbolt and waited for that to come and all. That was disappointing. Then I get it all put together, and the Apple stuff doesn't work because you need the latest Apple TV or HomePod, because you don't just need HomeKit from Apple. You need HomeKit with the threaded stuff, which enables Matter, and then Matter will then work with this. So I had to spend more money to get an Apple TV, and I have like four Apple TVs. Like it's a little line of marching behind them, and we've got two TVs really. And so I just had to get the latest one, take the one that was the one before the latest one, and push that down the line, and then get that. So I'm at another $150 with no additional functionality, by the way, on my TV really. It's just now I can do this. And then even then, I got the NFC to work, and it worked for 2 days and stopped working. The solution I found online and what I tried that eventually worked was remove it from Apple Home, add it back to Apple Home, and now it works again. And
Oh,
now I have
geez.
zero confidence in it, right? You
Right.
know, so it's like, oh, great. So there's that. Then I noticed there's a little, depending upon what type of, like the I don't know what it's called, but the stick that comes out of like the part where you turn the key, it's like the main central little thing. But depending upon the shape of that, because apparently there's like six different shapes depending upon where you are in the world and which one you buy. You have the there were these different plastic parts that went in that would fit in and then kind of make the smart lock work with the stick.
Right.
So I picked that one out. I'm trying to determine which one's the right one. And I read the little thing because everything else is metal. This thing is plastic. And it has a little thing saying, this is a consumable part. It is estimated to last 2 years. At that time, you can either 3D print one from, and we offer you the template for free, or you can order a new set from us. I'm like, what? Consumable part? And I'm looking at the thing. I'm like, why didn't you just make this out of metal?
Right.
Okay. So yeah, so I'm like, well, all right. I'm in this far. I mean, I was in, you know, almost $300 for the, you know, after taxes for the thing, then Apple TV $150, then a deadbolt lock $50. So I'm now $500 in. And then on top of that, it decided to stop working in the worst way today, where it refused to close, or it refused to open. Like it would open, it would turn, and it was like it wasn't catching. I was like, oh, great. And I've always suspected it made way too much noise. So my solution was, you know, to take it all apart and put it back together very slowly and carefully, checking each way, because I knew when I just put the regular deadbolt lock in, it was smooth as butter. Like with a key, close and open, smooth as can be. And then by the time I had assembled the whole thing, it was actually really clunky and took a lot of pressure. So I put everything together with like everything was just as tight as it had to be and no tighter. And from my experience of putting door locks together, I was like, maybe something was too tight. And when I finished, after testing it each step of the way, I ended up in a much better configuration, and it worked again. It's just that I have very little confidence in the entire system now. Can you imagine? I've got a part that's going to wear out in 2 years, I guess. I've got a the home key thing could just stop working for no reason anytime. There is a keypad I can enter code. I've got it may or may not be able to open with, you know, slippage or whatever. I mean, there's so many different parts that, you know, I don't have the, I paid $500 for this feeling I should have. Like literally, if I had just taken the deadbolt that I bought, like I disassembled it all now, put the deadbolt back in and just stuck the key in my pocket, I would have a better feeling about the lock
Well, that is how
than
most
I
of the
do
world
now.
works, right?
I know. I mean, I do have a lot of cool features. There's a full log. Everybody's got their own little codes. So you know, we have a record of, you know, who goes in and out or whatever, which it's like, well, why do I need that? Well, actually, sometimes I want to know, when I came in. I mean, really, it's like Sometimes it's like I want to remember, oh, I went and I did that thing yesterday. When I got back, when? Oh, I could look in the logs and see that I came in at 3:45. That, I like that. It's like a little diary. You've got remote, not only remote entry for things, but I could add a remote code so I could be out of town, like a dog sitter or something like that, could, be like, hey, I can't make it today. Is it okay if I send my buddy to walk your dog? I could say, yeah, but give him this code and then issue a one-time code from like halfway around the world. I mean, there's like a ton of really cool features. I could even, it even does notifications when the door's open, when the door's closed. I, of course, disabled those at about 15 minutes after I installed it because that's annoying. But I could enable it like when I'm on a trip. A lot of cool things that I'm sure I'll appreciate in the long run. But it is frustrating to get like these things that are like, this will make your life so much easier and so much more complex at the same time.
You know what you need to wait for? The AI version.
Yeah. It'll add a new level of complexity, right?
Right. It's either AI or blockchain that's going to solve the problem.
Yes, exactly. That'd be, oh, I lost the blockchain key. Well, now you'll never ever be able to get back in the door ever again.
Oh, great.
Neither will anybody else. Might as well
It's funny,
just wall it over.
We've been, like I said, in this house for what, 27, 28 years, and it's got traditional deadbolts on the doors we use the most. And every once in a while, I think, yeah, it'd be kind of cool, but nah, mostly for two reasons. One, the story you just told, right? And the other is that my wife is not as comfortable with technology as I am. And therefore, if there's a problem, it becomes a problem and it becomes my problem. So I just, you know what? Keys work. They do.
Yeah, I did have, I had a, we had like a keypad in my previous residence, which was a house. And let me tell you, it's a lot easier in a house because you have multiple entrances.
Right.
And this is really a lot about convenience. I mean, it is, I've experienced in the last week, it's great to be able to hold my Apple Watch up without having to press any buttons or do anything. I just hold it up to it and unlocks, especially when you're walking dogs, right?
Right.
Walking my dog, I get back, I've got the whole, dog on the leash, take the dog off the leash, all that stuff. It's just one less. I can hold my left arm up and unlock the door at the same time I'm kind of, gripping the release on the harness and all that. And that's really cool. So it's convenience. When you were in a house, you usually have, well, I had, I think there were at least three doors in the last house and the house before that. So you've got other doors with other either keypads or ways to get in.
Right.
Things like that. There is even in my old house, we had a garage, and the garage had it opened for the cars. And in the garage, there was a lockbox, and in the
Right.
lockbox was a spare key,
Right.
that kind of thing. But in a condo, in a building, you're in the weird situation where there is exactly one door.
The alternative,
That's
of
it.
course, is to, get up on the
Sc
roof, come down
scale
on the
the window.
balcony.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
there is. Yeah, exactly. We're too high up for the window. Even in a house, if you're like, oh, all the doors, well, you've got windows. You're
So,
basically weighing your like, how much is it going to cost for the locksmith? How much is it going to cost to replace this window? Hey, which one's the least expensive?
I don't know if I ever told you this, but when we took possession of this house,
Oh, I think you did. Yeah.
the day we took possession, we locked ourselves out, and my wife ended up having to crawl through a bathroom window that happened to be, something that was accessible and something where we could kind of work the window
Yeah.
open far enough to get in. So,
I
but
mean,
yes,
there's
we
the,
now, like you,
yeah.
we now also have, backup methods, right? Keypads and
Yeah.
hidden keys and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the good thing is that even though I don't like the fact that this lock came with this, you had to have a deadbolt, because the deadbolt has a key in it, you do have the backup of a key. So now, all I need to do is the next time I see a relative in the area, which won't be long, I'm going to give them one of those keys. And now, if for some reason the mechanism fails to work, but a key might open it, instead of calling a locksmith or somebody to break down the door or something, I actually have like a way to like, all right, we need to get that key over here, and maybe that will do it. So, it's always good to have that as a backup.
Fun times.
Yeah.
So you're the next item here, you're finding Prime Day revolting?
Well, okay. So here's the thing. This was actually, I thought of this. We see stories, like a tech journalist reports something interesting going on. We put it in the list, and then you say, "Oh, there's a story in whatever about this. Let's talk about it." This the opposite. I thought of this, and I searched for somebody talking about this, and probably for good reason. There was nobody talking about this, so I've got my little beef with Prime Day, Amazon Prime Day, where they have like these sales. And do they do it quarterly now? I don't know. They do
At
it pretty
least
often.
twice a year, but yeah, it
Yeah.
used to be once a year, and I don't know, can't keep track of it.
Right. And there's all, all these other retailers do have their equivalent to it now. It's almost
Right.
like if you want to be a serious retailer, you need to do this technique now, right? You have to have your membership, you have to have your special sale day or week. So the thing is, my beef with them is that, of course, the whole goal is to get you to buy things that you don't necessarily need, right? I mean, there are people that say, "Oh, we need a new vacuum cleaner, but this one'll do. Let's just wait for Black Friday or Prime Day, and then we'll buy one." And that's like the feel-good version of it. The reality is that a lot of the stuff purchased is. You see an article about Prime Day. Check out these Prime Day deals. Mac user, check out these Prime Day deals that you need for your Mac, right? You have the Samsung Galaxy, check out these cases and other accessories for the, whatever. That's, you go and you can't resist thinking, oh, maybe there's some really good deal on
Right.
something, So you go and you browse and they've got you. They've got you in their store now. You're browsing these cool gadgets. If it's an article, they're of course making affiliate money off of it, and they're
Right.
trying to show you the coolest looking gadgets and talk them up. How could you
And
possibly live without this dock for your Mac? It makes life so much easier.
affiliate link is probably the biggest reason they're reporting on it at all.
Yes, exactly. And my problem with it's the same problem as with so much tech journalism. Now, if you look at the lists from all of the sites that are reporting legitimate tech news, but like 1 out of 10 articles is just saying something like these 4 iPad cases are on sale right now at wherever, or get the new AirPod the new AirPods Max at its lowest price this year. There's like so many articles that just have that, and it's yeah the sites they do it because sometimes they make affiliate money off of it, most of the time probably. They also do it because it probably gets decent clicks, but I feel it's kind of like just I feel like I'm in that movie They Live, the old John Carpenter movie, and there's like the sign that says consume. It says consume, you must consume. And so you see these things and you're like, I was going about my day perfectly fine, not feeling I needed anything. And now suddenly I'm browsing this list of like the top 25 travel accessories on sale for, Amazon Prime Day. And I think the problem is, and why these things just get more and more popular and they'll never go away, is because it really is a combination of the retail store like Amazon and the media, the journalists, the tech journalists, bloggers, YouTubers, basically both getting something out of it, which doesn't often, it's not always the case in
Right.
things. Sometimes they're at odds, right? There's plenty of tech journalists that'll criticize Amazon all the time, but then turn around and say, oh, check out this sale on the new whatever for Amazon Prime Day. So it will never go away. There'll never be like, except with the exception of like somebody like me, there'll never be anybody that says, oh, I wish they would talk less about sales or the new MacBook Pro being $50 cheaper than its normal price or something like if you need a MacBook Pro, you need a MacBook Pro, you're probably looking at prices. You don't need a journalist to be pushing it in front of your face. Like you didn't know that you needed a MacBook Pro today, but $50, come on, buddy. Yeah, and so Amazon Prime Day is never going to is a problem, I think. It caused people to spend money they shouldn't be spending on things they don't need, but it's never going to be fixed because the very people that should be telling you this, it's in their interest to say the opposite.
Promote it. If it makes you feel any better, while you were talking, I went ahead and started browsing on Amazon and seeing
Oh,
if
no.
the Prime. For the record, it should make you feel better. There is nothing here that I want.
Yeah.
So there's just, and I actually find that for most of the Prime days, it's
Yeah.
very rare that there's anything that that actually appeals. On one or two occasions, there has been, but maybe I'm just better at resisting,
Yes,
because
probably.
if I don't need it, I'm not going to buy it.
I'm
And
pretty good.
apparently.
I think I've gotten to have such distaste for it. Just bef like a week before Amazon Prime Day in the summer, there was something I needed. I forget what it was. It was a couple hundred bucks. It was fairly expensive. And I was shopping at Amazon for this product. You know, they had like 50 different varieties of this thing. And I got the feeling, oh, wait, isn't next week Amazon Prime Day? Maybe I should wait and see if one of these is for sale. And I thought, no. I'm trying to figure out which the best one is now. It's unlikely whichever one I decide is the best one is going to be the one
Will
for
be the
sale.
one. Yep.
And, you know, and it may not even be for sale. And then so it was like, no, I believe in the long run, I do better by just saying, no, I need this now. I'm going to find the one I think is the best one for me now. I'm going to buy it. And then when Amazon Prime Day comes and goes, I'm not even going to go to the site because I don't need anything. And I think I'm actually going to save money in the long run by following that strategy instead of the, you know, wait, save up a bunch of stuff for Prime Day and all. My wife, when she was younger, used to work in retail, and she was used to say all the time that, you know, she would see, you know, there were products that had a retail price and then the sale price, and she would say there was it was never the retail price, never once was it in the store for the retail price. It was always the sale price, but they could still put the 10% off sticker on it and say this was the regular price. It was like, it was never like that. And there'd be times when they'd have huge sales, advertise them all over the place, and the prices didn't change a bit. You know, they already had sale stickers everywhere. I said, but people would flock in and they'd buy tons of stuff. And yeah, anyway. So,
So yes. The takeaway for our listener, of course, is
yes.
avoid the urge. You don't,
Yes.
you probably don't need it. So
Yep. So, all right.
have
So,
you uncovered a mystery?
yeah. Yes. There is a bit of a mystery going on now. I think I may have mentioned this
I think
before
you
here.
did. Yes.
Yeah, but finally the weird thing that's happening is other YouTubers are taking notice. So
Okay.
it's the mystery of the name salad YouTube comments, what I'm calling it. So it's when you get a comment on your YouTube video and the comment is like two names that could be a first or last name. That's the comment. It's like I don't know, Michael, you know, some Michael Marvel or whatever. I mean, it's just like a nonsense name. And it's like, what? That's a comment? Why is that a comment on this video? Sometimes there'll be a number before it. Sometimes it'll be more than two names. It'll be like up to six. But most of the times it's two. And I've been getting these for months, like at least 4 or 5 months.
Yep, me too.
I see them occasionally on other videos as well. After researching and trying to even use AI to figure out what the problem is, a few weeks ago, another YouTuber posted a video about them with a theory. And the interesting thing I saw first is she said that she'd be getting for like about 2 weeks. These started 2 weeks ago. And I was like, oh, it's been going on a lot longer than that. So even somebody who thought they knew something was happening wasn't even seeing the full picture. And had a she had a theory about him that I think was totally wrong. And that the theory, it was an interesting theory, but the theory was based on the fact that some YouTubers don't want people to know their real name. And so, like, if I would were to not want people to know my real name is Gary, well, first I would stop saying that in every single video at the very beginning.
Yes.
But the other thing is that if somebody left a comment that knew me and said, "Oh, thanks for the video, Gary," I would go in and delete that. Oh no, don't say my name. And after it happened a couple times, I'd probably go into the blocked words list and put my name there. So if somebody said my name, it would be blocked. It would end up in the moderation queue. And then I could say, oh no. So if somebody said, oh, you look like Gary Sinise, I could say, sure, that's fine. And I thought that was interesting, except that I totally disagreed because, first of all, not very many YouTubers try to block their name. And if you figured out somebody's name, I don't know what the big deal was. Like, why? How would that really help? Just since other YouTubers are o open with their names, like, how would knowing somebody's name who wanted to keep it secret, it wouldn't give you be privy? It just seemed way too convoluted with too little and questionable any payoff to have happen. The other theory that people kept throwing around seemed to make sense, but I couldn't quite get it, but I think I do now. And that is that you create a bot account, and you can't just create a bot account on YouTube and then post spam, because what'll happen is the algorithm really quickly will say, oh, this account was created. It immediately posted something with a link, and that's probably spam.
Okay.
Instead, the idea is that you would create an account. A normal person would create an account and comment and say thank you on a video, or this was really helpful and whatever. And then maybe post a link like a year and a half later. And that would be like legitimate. Oh, it's a real person. And they were just posting a link to something related to the video.
Right.
It would make sense that bots would want to post things to comments and build up a history of comments
Right.
so that then when they posted the spam, maybe they wouldn't be detected. The thing that really got me about this is why post random names?
Yes.
Because posting the words thank you would be far better. And in combination, you could come up with thank you, I like this video. Thank you, this was helpful. Or this was helpful, thank you. I mean, thanks, all sorts of way, TX, lots of things.
And for the record, I'm getting those too, right?
Yeah, and you get those, and
Very,
they
very
are.
generic comments
Yes.
that actually don't reference any content in the video or even in my articles. I get these as comments on my articles that are just, generic
And it
statements
makes
of
sense.
appreciation.
It makes sense. And the thing is, they are hard to detect because sometimes they're real. And I know they're real because I do tend to see the little icons of the people.
Sure.
And I do tend to sometimes recognize
There are some we recognize,
certain
absolutely.
people. And sometimes I will see a thank you and say, is this spam? And I look and I say, oh, that's Joe. Yeah, I know Joe. I just helped Joe out with a problem last week. Okay, huh. So Joe says thank you. And then there's another one that says thank you. I don't know. Is that spam? I don't know. I mean, it's certainly very natural to say that. So why are these bots posting random names? And somebody else posted a theory that perhaps it's just the idea is you're not going to have those in block lists. Like real words may be in block lists, even thank you, right? But names, that's really hard, especially you could put 100 names in your block list and then a random name could have none of that, right? So if your goal is to simply get a count of comments that are not blocked, like get to 400 of those over 5 years and then post your spam, posting a random set of names that won't get blocked or recognized as spam in hopes that the YouTuber doesn't even see them kind of makes sense. You're thinking it's not the content that matters. That's unimportant. It's just the number. I've posted, 400 comments. No YouTube creator has, blocked any of them or blocked me. And so I'm good to go. And that's when it would make sense to use names, not words, and to use random names. The only problem is, of course, if you do run into somebody like me who has a macro on their computer, and but by pressing F11 will not only delete the comment, but report your account. then yeah, that's
I
the risk you're
actually,
taking.
for those, I use the hide the account from my
I do,
channel.
yeah, it's a lot of steps though.
Well,
So
and
I
my understanding is that that one's the most effective, because you're right. There's multiple steps if you want to report and delete and
yep,
so
I do
forth.
the whole so I you know, my F11 basically hits the little three dots. It reports it as spam. It picks the type of spam as the closest thing, commercial spam. And then it says, you know, do you want to hide this user from your channel? Yes, I do. Check. Okay. It does all those steps for me with one key, which is so it's handy and it doesn't put me out to be, have to do them.
Right.
And my hope is that this is exactly what they don't want, right? They want to get to a certain number of comments without that happening. And then
I
their
have
account.
another theory about these names.
Yeah.
What you've described makes total sense. For the record, I'm seeing comments that have like four or five random names,
Yes, I've seen those. Yep.
rather than just a first name, last name kind of thing. I wonder if these are attempts to identify channels that do a bad job of managing their comments. So
Yeah.
these five random name things, they're unlikely to be on block lists. If the channel owner isn't going to do anything about them, they remain. And that way, sometime later, the potential spammer can come along and say, okay, let's do a search for these five names because I've used them in certain places. And oh, look, they're still over on the MacMost channel. Excellent. Let's go
Yeah.
spam the heck out of MacMost.
They don't even have to search for the names. They could just be keeping a database of the actual like where the comment is and what it is, right? So then a few years down the road or months or whenever, they could simply go in the database, say this user account made this comment on this video on this channel. Check, is it there? Oh, it is. Great. Now post spam to another video for that same channel. And yeah, so the two things basically aren't exclusive. Like
Right.
it's the same thing. Build up comment count and also know that, hey, you know, this wouldn't even be the first comment left by this user at this channel. So it's
Right.
even more likely to get through.
Yep.
Yeah, so in that case, you and I are doing the exact right thing. It's a pain in the ass to have to do it, but it's not
Oh,
nice
yeah.
to know that we are probably making our channel more immune.
What's
From these
interesting
comments.
about it is that, or fr somewhat frustrating about it. So, I'm sure like you know, like once a day or maybe multiple times a day, I go over to YouTube Studio and go to the comments section and just start perusing the comments. I think we've talked before that I simply scroll down until I saw the last comment that I left, and then I work
Yes.
my way forward.
Yeah.
So there's this dichotomy where on one hand, you know, if I see that there's a bunch of comments and thinking, oh, great, that's a lot of work. How much of it is spam? I'm going to have to read all these things, you know, all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, oh, good, there's a bunch of comments.
Yeah.
People are engaging. It's
Yeah, exactly. Now I know the feeling.
yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of bizarre, but yeah, it is what it is.
Okay.
So, you
So.
know, we've been kind of, I don't know, grumping this episode so far.
Yeah.
We've had things to complain about, but let's kick it up a notch and actually get off my lawn. And you will absolutely understand this because I'm
A
sure you see
hundred.
this
Just a
every
few words you've written here on the screen, I know exactly what you're going to say. Yeah.
I got a question the other day that was essentially a small novel. It was, oh gosh, probably 500 or 1,000 words, right? The size of one of my articles, if not. And you know, it was like the backstory and the thises and God love them, I appreciate the fact that they're putting in so much effort to getting their question presented and asked, but for the life of me, I couldn't see a question in the maelstrom. So, just for the hell of it, we talked about Perplexity last week. I copy-pasted this entire little novel into Perplexity, preceded by the phrase, "Can you make sense of this?" And what it returned was a beautifully organized outline of all of the issues, all of the things that have been tried. I mean, it was lovely.
Nice.
But yeah, I feel bad for people that just spend so much time and then, fail to ask a question or any of that kind of stuff. At the other end of the spectrum, of course, and I know you run into this too, we get the people, and I've had two of them that like this morning, where it boils down to, how do I download this thing where this thing is on their computer already, or this doesn't work. Okay, what doesn't work? What were you expecting it to do? I mean, the usual stuff, right? Not nearly enough information for me to even take a guess at what's going on. I actually have an article about what information should I provide, and my Ask a Question page actually references it. Although since I take a lot of questions directly by email, a lot of people don't see that, but it is something that I then use in my responses to say, "Hey, you got help me help you, right? Give me some information about the problem." So yeah, so that's my. Little bit more of a grump this week that, too much or too little. I mean, there's a Goldilocks zone in the middle where there's enough information to solve to
Goldilocks zone,
and just go from there. So anyway, that was me.
yeah, instead of having my own, I'm actually going to just jump right on yours and say, I get that too. And if I had an assistant and they were to read these things in advance and say, Gary, I've got two questions for you. One is three sentences long, one is nine paragraphs long. Can you guess which one does not give you enough information to answer the question? I would say no, because it's just as likely that the nine paragraph one does not give me the information I need to answer the question, and that the three sentence one gives me everything I need there sometimes. A typical example, since macOS Sequoia came out, there's some new camera features that work with the webcam to replace your background. And seems to only work with Apple's cameras, like the ones on the MacBooks and the ones on the iMac. People have been asking me in comments and all this all the time about this feature and failing to what I would consider to be the most important thing. It's a camera feature. Which camera are you using? I mean, if you and I'd say that the people that are using a MacBook camera or an iMac have most just accidentally given me that information. Like on my iMac, I'm not able to get this to work. Okay, you don't realize it, but you just revealed that you're using your iMac's built-in camera, And so I know that. Same thing with the MacBook. But it's been the case where I've had back and forths with people. I can't get it to work on my Mac. Well, which Mac do you, what camera do you use? I'm using my webcam. Yes. Which Mac model do you have? I have a Mac Mini. Do you have the Apple Studio display? No, I don't. Okay, so what camera are you using? I have the Logitech, whatever. Okay, that's the important piece of information that I really wanted right up top because it answers the question. And yeah, it's just, but people can give me so much detailed information. I tried this, I tried that, and still not tell me that they had a Mac Mini and they were using a Logitech camera, which would have been my first thing if I thought camera feature not working. I'm on a Mac, but I'm not using an Apple camera. Anyway, so good
And I
example.
will say that in your example, you were a lot more patient than I was because I too
Oh.
have done these back and forths,
Yes.
which take forever. And I'm sure it's true for you too. We're doing so many different things at the same time. Each time
Yeah.
we have to revisit this conversation,
Oh.
it's like another context switch. We have to reload the problem or the state of the problem into our brain, and then say, "Oh yeah, this was that one." Well, okay, here's another little piece of information that doesn't help.
Oh, yeah.
I tend to give up fairly. I don't want to say fairly quickly, but it depends a lot on the specifics of the question and the person and so forth. But yeah, at some point you just have to realize that, maybe you'd be better served if someone could actually physically visit you and help you with this problem.
Yeah, call Apple support. You're paying them, not me. So I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, and for the record, I do have an assistant who's doing this. Hi, Mark. He actually listens to the podcast because I get some comments from him from time to time. But yes, he's seeing this in spades. What part of his job is, in fact, to kind of sort of protect me from some of this, both in the incoming questions and in the comments on the website. All
That is
righty.
cool. So speaking of cool, yeah.
Let's do some cool. So, we've been watching Penguin
Yeah.
on Max, and it's not at all what I really expected out of Penguin. But then I grew up with, the original campy Penguin in the TV series 50 years ago. But no, it's really gritty. It's apparently set immediately after and leverages some of the events of the immediately preceding Batman movie, which we haven't seen. But it's gritty, it's dirt, the acting dirty, it's the acting is awesome. It's basically a mob story set in the DC universe, and which is, that makes sense for Penguin as a character, what he's up to. And I just we're just enjoying it. We're enthralled by the it's really good storytelling and writing, and it really is engaging. So yeah, Penguin on Max, go for it.
Cool. I think it's interesting how DC has decided that they're what they're going to do from now on seems to be we're going to do Batman, but there's not going to be Batman. Like, because that's just like a majority of the stuff that DC has come out with recently. Batman, but with no Batman. But okay, so switching gears, what I'm going to talk about, I don't know if you've heard of this, if this has been on your radar. But it's a book called I'm Starting to Worry About This Black Box of Doom. And it's by an author by the name of Jason Pargin. He is a very well-known TikToker at this point, but his career in kind of social media and internet commentary started way before TikTok existed. Have you ever seen any of his stuff, his
Nope.
commentary?
Nope.
Oh,
Nope. First I've heard of
interesting.
him.
Anyway, he has very thoughtful, interesting philosophical things on society and the internet and culture that he posts very frequently to TikTok. I don't know if he also posts to other channels. He probably does. Instagram, probably, I bet. And so I've been following his stuff because he's a pretty smart guy and he conveys ideas really well. About a lot of the same stuff that we talk about, but maybe not the actual technical details, more the I don't know, the all-encompassing, how it's changing society kind of thing.
Sure.
But he writes fiction books. And the interesting thing is that he's written a couple series of books. I did read one book from his of his before. But this new book, I'm Starting to Worry About This Black Box of Doom, is the one he's been writing while he's been doing all this, these videos on TikTok about what's going on in the world. So getting it and reading it, you're actually seeing that he wasn't doing two separate things. He was doing one thing. Like if he was researching one thing one week for the book to, so the characters could talk about it intelligently, he also did a TikTok video on it.
Okay,
So as I'm reading through it, I'm like, oh, I remember this TikTok video when he talked about this thing or that thing or, all this stuff. So it was fascinating to read it because it's like I feel like this is somebody like if you had a friend that was writing a book and you talked to them every week and they were always bringing up weird topics and then you read the book and you'd be like, oh, you were researching stuff for the book because it's all in here. Anyway, it's a really interesting book. It's very, it's just this premise is simple. It is a Lyft driver, young kid in LA, I think it's LA, in California anyway, picks up a young woman with this big black box that he has to load into his Lincoln Navigator and says, I'm going to pay you $200,000 to drive me all the way across country to Washington, D.C. But no questions asked. You can't ask me what's in the box, why I'm going, any of that stuff. And she convinces this guy to do it, even though he doesn't want to. He's an introvert and he does not want to go. But she talks him into it. And one of the other conditions was they have to throw away their phones in
Right.
case they're tracked. So he is trying to figure out what's in this box, and you hear his thoughts about that. And they, you think, oh, throwing away so they can't, you know, their devices, they can't be tracked, but it also means they don't know what's going on in the world. It turns out they become internet famous, and more people are following them as this is going on, but they don't know because they don't have phones.
But they're being tracked without the technology to track them.
Oh, well, the whole internet is onto them. There's like
Right.
subreddits, there's like, yeah, it's a whole thing. And so, but it's a thriller, but the whole thing really is mostly a pretext for the conversations that the two of them, and then also some other people that they meet along the way, have about the internet and society. So they have these long conversations. And a long time ago, he made a video about how fantastic a movie My Dinner with Andre was. And I see that in this book,
Okay,
except it's
yeah.
two younger people on a road trip, and they both know a lot about, like, they both have really strong thoughts and feelings about things, social media, and how the internet's changed the world and all of the new technology and everything. And they talk it out, and there are opposing viewpoints a lot. And they
Sounds
talk and talk, and
fascinating. I'm
it is fascinating.
gonna throw it to the top of my read next list
Really
here.
interesting stuff all along, and there's just the right mix because they'll talk for a bunch of pages about something really fascinating and don't necessarily feel that they need to come to an agreement either, because otherwise a book would have been impossible to write. And then the next kind of like more thrilling actiony thing would happen, you know. And it, so we keep going on, you know, like that. There's enough action mixed with enough like modern cultural philosophy to like just be perfect and keep you going through this book really quickly. I devoured it in, well, 5, 6 days, really fast. So anyway,
Excellent.
good book. And I had high expectations the way he talked it up, and it met those expectations.
So you
So
were not disappointed.
no.
Cool. Let's see. As we're on our way out here, we'd like to promote some of the stuff we do. This week's article I want to point people at is something called You're Never Too Old. It's askleo.com/20433. I may have mentioned it in a previous episode some time ago. It's one of my go-to articles because I feel so strongly about the topic. One of the reasons that I brought it to here today is because I recently did a republish of it, put a new YouTube video on it, and the YouTube video is getting a fascinating set of comments that from the very people that I wanted to hear from, the 80 and 90-year-olds who are having a great time with technology. So anyway, you are never too old. 20433.
Cool. I'll just point to a video I did on the new built-in Mac password manager, because yeah, it's probably the major new app that's part of macOS Sequoia, but also iOS 18 and iPadOS 18. There's been a password manager, but it's always been like, oh, you get to the passwords and settings, or you know, things like that. Now they just kind of brought it out to the front and have a like, here's the app where you manage all that stuff, and now it's just like everybody else's password manager. Not a secret hidden feature that most people don't know about, but like right out front. So I thought, you know what? I better just do a full-on video on how to use this,
Is
now
it
that it's
by
like that.
any chance, does it work in any ecosystem other than Mac, Apple?
Yes, it there it I haven't played with it because I don't really have Windows easily running for me. I've got it on a laptop somewhere, but
Right.
in the iCloud app that Apple provides, the latest version of it supposedly has access to your passwords. So it's a new section in there. In addition, they came out with a Chrome extension that works on Windows as well.
Right.
And from what I understand, it's a Chrome extension that will work on Chrome or Edge. So I think they've got
Right.
Windows pretty
They,
well
yeah.
covered.
Yep,
They
those
don't
ought to
have
do it.
Android covered, though, strangely. It's just, you know, iPhone, iPad, Mac, and then they've got these two ways to work with it on Windows. Anyway.
All righty. Cool. Well, here we are. That ought to wrap it up again for another week. As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you, well, talk to you again here real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/TEH232. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.